fans, how you doing? It's your boy Jonathan Macri with you for another episode, the very first solo episode of the NBA Takedown podcast. I said a few days ago when I recorded part one of this mailbag that we were taking it easy this week. I was telling Sean and Jeff to get lost, and my intention, truthfully, was to just have one other episode this week that was going to be released on Wednesday, which you already heard if you listened to part one of this mailbag. If you haven't, go listen to part one of this mailbag. But I put out a call for questions, and I got so many questions, and I'm like, no, the show is too early in its existence for me to be shunning listeners who have dutifully, raised their inquiries here. So here I am with part two of the mailbag. I know a lot of people are traveling this week. I, for one, am always looking for a little extra podcast love, you know, during the holidays. Maybe not Thanksgiving holidays, but definitely during Christmas break. Because Christmas break, you know, I'm home with my kids and like trying to entertain them. And I'm this is probably a terrible thing to say because it makes me out to be a horrible father, but I will usually have one ear pod in listening to something while I am pretending to pay attention to whatever it is they are doing that they probably shouldn't be doing. You know what? If you are in need of an extra pod here or there, well, we got you. So there you go. Shout out to everybody who submitted questions, and more importantly, shout out to everybody who has already been supporting the show in such a big way. I will give yet another plug where that is concerned. If you are consuming this podcast on YouTube, do us a favor. Go also subscribe to it or follow it wherever you get your podcasts. If you're listening to it in podcast form, go ahead and subscribe on YouTube. All of those things help us out, as does following us on social media, where we can be found at NBA Takedown or on Twitter at NBA Takedown Pod. So without further ado, I'm recording this at 4:09 p.m. on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. I have done pretty much everything that I need to do that can be done today. And yet, when I told, because we're hosting, as you probably know by now, tomorrow. So you're listening to this in the future. We will have hosted. I will. Hopefully it went okay. But even when I told my wife I was going out to record a solo podcast, she gave me that look that we all know. So I'm going to set a timer of 2 minutes per question, because we had 21 questions left and I told her I'd be done well before 5 o'clock. So here we go. Starting at the top, Elon Rosenblatt, my good buddy Elon. I always find trade discussions the most intriguing, specifically what teams could use Domantas Sabonis, a talent 100%, but much like Randall, who we are familiar with, isn't plug and play. Side question, would you do Sabonis at Keon Ellis and Carter for Carl Anthony Towns? Reunite Sabonis with Mike Brown. In my opinion, ceiling is lowered substantially. I'll answer the easy part first. No, I would not do any Sabonis center trade for Cat. And I have not been shy about my Cat frustrations this year. And yet he is that much more of a floor spacer than Sabonis. And I at least see at times passable defense from Carl Anthony Towns. I'm not sure I could say the same for Sabonis at the five. You could also play Cat at the four if you need to. Can't really play Sabonis any place other than the five. So there's versatility, there's floor spacing, maybe even a little bit defense. I know Sabonis gives you the playmaking and the passing, but give me Carl Anthony Towns, even with the impending extension. As for a potential Sabonis trade, it's tough because teams are going to have to give up the requisite salary to get him. The obvious one that's out there, and this is already, I think, been rumored, is to the Bulls for Vooch and Pat Williams. But like, if you're the Bulls, what really are you giving up for the right to add Sabonis other than the outgoing salary? Are you giving up a future unprotected first round pick? I don't know if I'd want to do that if I was the Bulls. And then the other two teams I just wrote down, I wrote down the Suns because they have the salary in Green, and I guess they would have to give up Mark Williams too. But like, why wouldn't you just keep Jalen Green and Mark Williams? And then the last one, and this has kind of been bandied about for, it feels like, 3-4 years, the Warriors. You could do Jonathan Kuminga, Moses Moody, and Buddy Hield. I'm sure the Kings would love to do that. Would the Warriors want to do that? How would Sabonis look with Draymond Green? That's our timer. That's just a lot of, there's really not a lot of spacing there. I know Kuminga doesn't give you spacing either, but Sabonis, Green, Butler, you're just banking on the collective basketball smarts. But I don't know. The Warriors may come up again later in this podcast. So next question, 2 minute timer on. At the quarter mark of the season, which NBA teams grade out the best for their records and efforts? And going forward, who may be sleepers? I would say the team that I have in terms of grading out the best, like when you say grading out the best, I mean like the Thunder, obviously grade out the best. But in terms of who I have been most impressed by, I got to tell you, I understand they had the whatever it was. They probably had the third best over-under in the league, third or fourth best over-under in the league, something like that. I've been incredibly impressed by how well the Houston Rockets have played and how well they have looked, and the fact that the lack of spacing or traditional spacing has not seemingly impacted them at all. I mean, they have the best offense in the league, you know, and it's like, I think you could have had similar conversations about Orlando and Houston. Obviously, Houston has a much higher talent level going into the season, but the fact that they have had no issues at all, I've just been incredibly impressed by them in the West, and then in the East, and they're going to come up again a few times in this podcast, Miami. I think Miami and Zach Lowe and Stan Van Gundy started off their podcast on Wednesday talking about the Heat. I'll speak about them more in a later question, but I am 1,000% bought into this team being legit, being a factor in the East. And I think the fact how they have bought in to what Spo wanted to do, which is just a complete 180 from how they've operated, you know, like most teams operate for the last several years. Incredibly impressive. As I'm recording this right now, they're 12-6. So we'll see if that continues. All right. I beat the timer. Next question from Charles. What's up, Charles? Josh Hart and Steve Kerr kicked off the season's too damn long discussion early this year. Is this a real thing? Of course, the regular season is a slog, play is physical, and star injuries are rampant. But assuming absolutely no one is going to leave money on the table, can anything actually be done about it? Nothing can be done about it, and nothing will be done about it until they figure out a way to make up the money. And you know what? You know what rich people like being is rich. And you know what they like being even more than rich is richer. So my honest answer is it's not going to change. It's not going to change. It's going to stay at 82 games, or unless they like take away some like quote unquote regular season games and replace it with like another tournament. So it's effectively the same number of games, because if you bring the owners a proposal that, I mean, even if it were, let's say you could prove that the said proposal would increase the level of play and keep guys healthier. Let's say you could prove that, which you can't. Let's say you could prove that. They would ask, okay, is that going to put more money in our pockets? And unless you could prove that, and then they would ask the next question, which is like, all right, is less games taking money out of our pockets, right? And you'd be like, yeah, okay. They're not going to do it. So look, I pitched my little idea on part one of the mailbag. It's never going to happen. You know, it's capitalism. The NBA is not a non-for-profit organization. If it was, maybe it would happen, but it's not. So the owners are just going to say, fuck it. Keep giving us money. Okay. Next question. A five-parter? Yes, a five-parter from Cosmo Laney. What's going on, Cosmo? All right. I'm going to start the timer. Answer these one at a time. Do you think the Pistons will go all in and trade Ausar Thompson so they could get Laurie? I do not think the Pistons will trade Ausar Thompson to get Laurie. I would predict that they would still end up with Laurie Markkanen. Two, it seems like the Warriors want to make a trade badly. Who do you think is the best option for them? Who do I think is the best option for them? I think the best option for them is the best two-way wing they can get for Jonathan Kuminga, and I just don't know who that is. I mean, there's been rumors, I think, for a little while, you know, that, I mean, look, there's always rumors that are around the Warriors. It's clear Kuminga wants out. It's clear he's probably going to get his way and get out. I actually misspoke on part one of the mailbag. I forgot that because he actually signed the extension and he's the extension has begun. He wasn't there is no base year compensation issue. So they could just trade him at his current salary of $22 million. And then when you throw in Moody and Hield, who is, you know, having a down shooting season, I still think they may consider him an important part of their team. But like, they could build up the salary pretty easily. It's just about who's all in on Jonathan Kuminga as a major part of their present and or future. And like, outside of do they want to do like Kuminga for like Jalen Green and something that the Suns could do? Like, would the Suns do that? The Suns are playing really well. I don't know if the Suns would want to do that. Maybe they would. My guess is they would rather keep Jalen Green and Ed Kuminga, but that's not going to be possible. I've taken way too long. All right, rapid fire. After reports came out about the AD trade and the new deal suitors, it seems there's a timer. It seems Dallas has adjusted and said they need him. Saving face in parentheses. If not AD, then what move do you think they should make? I would just trade any of these veteran pieces. See if anybody wants Clay. Nobody probably does. See if you get some for Najee Marshall. See if you get someone for. I mean, just tank. Just tank. That's it. Trade away all the vets. Get what you can get and tank. Probably can't trade Kyrie, but if you can trade Kyrie. Even better. Who's your coach of the year so far? Eric Spoelstra, easy. And then who's the dark horse team you think can make a deep playoff run? The Miami Heat. Christopher Gallo next up. What is going on in Dallas? Would they really trade AD? And if so, would their asking price be sky high to reflect their embarrassment about the Luka trade? So I did speak about this a little bit the other day and I figured, all right, let me actually give you, and I really tried to look hard at all 29 other teams to see if there was a trade that would solve, that would check all the boxes. So worthwhile for Dallas, which means you have to give them something, because as much as they may want to internally tank, they're not just going to give AD away. They're just not going to do that. Like, you don't give away an asset, especially when he's under contract for another year before his player option. And then who is like, no, you know, up and coming team that is realistic about who they are is going to trade for AD, because why would you? And all the contending teams, how could you possibly trade for AD looking at his injury record over the last several years and like kind of the talk and rumors that he came in like he was out of shape to start the year? It's just really, really, really hard to construct an Anthony Davis trade. And the only one I came up with, and like I don't think they would do it, but, and this gets to how desperate this team is, and we're going to get back to that in a bit, is the Clippers. Because they could easily compile the salary with John Collins, Zubac, and Bogdanovich. But here's why the Clippers wouldn't do it. I don't think they would. AD has a $63 million player option in the 27-28 season. The Clippers want to clear the books for that year. It is very clear that they want to clear the books for that year. So I think there's at least a 50-50 possibility that AD, the way his career is going, he may opt into that player option, to say nothing of the extension that he wants. So you're going to need, I think, one of two things to happen. One of these middling teams like the Bulls to talk themselves into wear an AD away from a conference finals run. And I'm sorry, I just don't see the team out there that is that delusional, that is in that kind of juicy middle ground of the NBA. Or you're going to get a team that is a contending team or thinks of themselves as a contending team where things go incredibly off the rails. And who's the best candidate for that? Are the Cavs trading Evan Mobley for Anthony Davis? They're not going to do that, you know? Or the freaking Are they going to trade, Darius Garland and Jared? Like, they're not going to do that. They're just not. I don't see Orlando trading one of their big pieces for a guy AD's age and with his injury track record. Look at the Knicks. If this season goes sideways enough and Kat is just like miserable, I'm not saying that he's even remotely unhappy. I'm just saying, let's just say he was not performing and he was unhappy and so on and so forth. Like, yeah, I guess they would look at that. But even that, I don't know. I have a tough time seeing. Okay. David Simonetti. I meant to write down my notes for this question, and I did not. So this one's – sorry, David. This one's going to be off the dome. Rank your top five gettable players at the trade deadline, can be via buyout or trade. So, like, the five best guys that are basically – so basically the way I interpret this question is guys who are on – I've got to set the timer. Guys who are on like bad or losing teams or teams that might pivot into tanking or not making a run for it this year that then, you know, a good team could want slash be able to get. My number one is Derek White on the Celtics. And the reason I think that is because the Sixers, I think, are going to go for it this year. They don't have to go for it this year. But I think Maxey's been too good, and like Embiid's playing, and George just trying to play, and like the kids are good. Like, I think the Sixers are going to keep going for it, and the Bucks clearly are going for it. So Boston could very easily find themselves by midseason, like with the ability to slide out of the play-in race and enter the lottery. And we saw what happened last year in the lottery. Fucking Mavs got Cooper Flagg. So would that interest Boston? It might. I don't know. But if they could get someone to offer them like an OG Anunoby or Desmond Bane package for Derek White, I have to think that they would entertain that. Number two, actually, these aren't in order, but I'll also put Michael Porter Jr. on this list. I think Michael Porter Jr. is really good, and you could have him from the Brooklyn Nets for, I'm sure, not that much. I don't know that any of the Kings guys are really worth their salary. I will throw DeMar DeRozan in there out of respect, although I wonder, again, who is the contending team that has the salary to just shed to bring DeRozan in when DeRozan is probably going to be their sixth man, and he's like not the cleanest fit because, again, he doesn't space the floor and he doesn't really defend or up your defense. So DeRozan will be on the list as well. I'll throw Najee Marshall in there. And then who's my last guy that I want to put? So the problem with the buyout guys is like all the contending teams are over the first apron. So like you could CJ McCollum. Yeah, CJ McCollum might get bought out, but he can't because he makes more than the full mid level. Like he's not going to be allowed to sign with a first apron team. So I feel bad putting him. I'll say Jose Alvarado. I think Jose Alvarado is a ripe candidate to get moved. And Chris Dunn, for honorable mention. I'll throw him in there as well. Okay. Jamon Clark. Given the NBA changed... given that the NBA has changed, would a player like an enforcer type, Charles Oakley, have a role in today's NBA? Yes, because Charles Oakley was skilled. Charles Oakley wasn't some I'm thinking of the hockey term goon who just went out there and pushed people around. And no, Charles Oakley was like, first of all, the way he drained 16 footers, like it was nothing. If Charles Oakley played in the league today, I think he would absolutely have extended his range out to the arc. At the very least, he would have been a competent 3-point shooter. It depends on the skill level. If the skill level was high enough, yeah, I think they could play today. And now could like Oakley or like, you know, Bill Laimbeer, guys like that have still, you know, Laimbeer is the better example because Laimbeer, I think, did get by, on being more leaning into that stuff. And I'm not saying he wasn't skilled, but like would Bill Laimbeer was one of the best centers in the league in the 80s. Would he even be a starting center today? That's a more interesting question to me. It's a good question. I kind of don't know how to answer it because it's kind of unique to the player. Okay, Russell. All right, picked up 40 seconds on that. So I could use that, those 40 seconds somewhere else. Russell, with the announcement of CP3 retiring, I'm going to need the extra 40 seconds here. Let's hear your top 10 point guards of all time. Loewen Simmons just did his. I listened to the podcast, full disclosure. That was a very good podcast. And he had CP3 over Kidd, which I disagreed with. Kidd powered two straight finals teams, albeit in a weak East, and his size made him an even better defender than CP. Thoughts? So I'm just going to read you my rankings, and I'll give you a little bit of detail on each. Greatest point guard of all time is Magic Johnson. I don't think there's much debate or discussion about that. I think there would be debate slash discussion if we brought other, you know, again, they said it on the pod, and I'll say it now. Like, is LeBron James a point guard? Well, he's been the ball handler on every team he's been on. So, you know, but no, I'm not even considering Steph. If I was considering Steph, and I know a lot of people do consider Steph a point guard, I would have him as of now second after Magic. And I think there's still a possibility Steph, before the end, all is said and done, could, like, this might sound crazy, I think he could challenge Magic for that, but I just don't consider Steph in the point guard and a point guard in the same way that Magic is. I can't consider you a point guard if you're not oftentimes like Steph was always the co-lead. It was his music that he made, this beautiful music that he made with Draymond Green. And yes, I understand what Loewen was saying, which is that he was orchestrating the offense. He was just doing it off the ball. For me, when I think of a point guard and I'm doing this particular ranking, it's the guy with the ball in their hands more often than not. So I'm not considering Steph. So Magic 1, Oscar 2, Bob Cousy 3. Before you shake your head at me, tossing in the guy who played in the 50s. 10 All-NBA first teams for Bob Cousy. The only guys who have more than that are LeBron, Kobe, and Karl Malone. The NBA existed for 20 years before like the mid 60s, which is when we kind of, you know, look at as like the, you know, when people often start paying attention to, like, you know, not, I'm not saying the late 60s was like the modern NBA. Hell, the late 90s wasn't even the modern NBA. But like, people like toss out the 40s and they toss out the 50s. And I think they toss out the early 60s even. That 20 years, that now that's a quarter of the time the league existed. Bob Cousy was at worst, the third best player of the first 20 years of the league, behind George Mikan and Bob Pettit. And I personally would put Cousy ahead of Mikan because of the longevity and because of like how much, like the league had kind of progressed enough. By the point, you know, when Cousy was still doing it, Cousy was doing it in the early 60s. You know, Mikan, he was more of the 40s. So I think even comparing 40s to early 60s, there's a big enough difference there. I'll put Cousy behind Pettit. But in any case, I have Cousy third, Isaiah fourth. He was the best player on three finals teams, two champions, and five conference finals teams. Like, what are we doing here? I do have Kidd ahead of CP3. And not only that, I have Steve Nash ahead of CP3. And that may seem sacrilegious to some. I would rather have the guy that had the higher ceiling for a shorter amount of time than the guy who had the overall better career. And Steve Nash, for 7 years, was a guy who could be the best player on a championship team. I know he was not, but he could be. I never once believed in all the years that I watched Chris Paul that he could be the best player on a title team. That's me. Others may disagree. I felt that Nash could. So for that reason, and the fact that, like, for as much as he was banged up and he started his career kind of slowly in Dallas and ended his career, like, just it went off the rails in LA. Like, you look at his total numbers, you look at his averages, you look at obviously the two MVPs, like, there's a lot there. Like, it was a lot more than flesh in the pan with Mike D'Antoni. So so that means I have Nash sixth. I have CP3 seventh. Again, like, he was the second best player on one finals team and the second best player on one conference finalist. I just can't I can't get him any higher than that. And then after that, I think Stockton is comfortably eighth. I have Clyde ninth because fuck it. I have his signed basketball behind me. I also think it's like you could legitimately put Clyde Knight. And if you look at, he was, you know, perhaps the co-best player on two title teams, I think that carries a lot of weight. And then there's probably about five or six guys you could put at 10. I have Gary Payton. So there you go. Okay, that went long on that one. Let's hurry it up here. Jamon Clark with another one. Thanks for the multiple questions, Jamon. The NBA is now changing to have a faster pace. What is different about how NBA players are compared or drafted compared to, say, 10 years ago? So my first gut reaction is like, well, little guys don't get drafted at the top of the draft anymore because everybody's worried about having enough size on the court. And like, you have to be a transcendent offensive player to justify, you know, being small and being out there. And then I look at the league and I'm like, oh, wait, Jalen Brunson, Donovan Mitchell, Steph Curry, like that's not really true. And then I look at the last couple of drafts. Reed Shepard got drafted early. Scoot Henderson got drafted early. Jaden Ivey got drafted early. Now I know Scoot and Ivey are like big for their size, but so it's not the size thing. So I just think it comes down to skill. Like as recently as the 2013 draft, like Cody Zeller, Alex Len, and Nerlens Noel were all top six picks in 2013, which is like staggering. You're just, that's not going to happen anymore. Like guys have to have at least the promise of a skill package that I don't think was as much of a requirement 10 years ago. I think that's been the biggest change. And like, obviously shooting, like again, Michael Kidd Gilchrist was the second pick in the draft, not that long ago. Like he would not go second overall now, even with all the things that he could do. All right. Jessica Elsner, thank you so much for the question, Jessica. You asked me several questions. I can't answer some of these because otherwise I would get canceled, but I will read all the questions. Which NBA player smells the best and which smells the worst? I wish I knew, but I don't. Should this criteria be how the All-Star game is organized? I'm going to go with no, but good question. Shouldn't Nebraska, Iowa, Kansas each get a pro NBA team in addition to Vegas and Seattle? Trick question. The answer is yes. So you answered that one for me. I don't have to answer it. Why is Anthony Davis? Man, I think the league, the voters are going to look back at including him on the top 75 list ever. I didn't have him on my top 75. He like just missed, but he did miss. Like, I don't know. I wonder if that wasn't a little bit of recency bias. Yeah. Anyway, favorite funk soul songs from the 70s. I actually don't know if these were all 70s songs. I'm pretty sure they were all 70s songs. One or two of them might be like 1980 or 81. I'm going to go September because there's a line in there about 21st day of September, which is my daughter's birthday. Boogie Shoes and Brick House. A couple of classics. And then rank the Marvel films. So I am not ranking every Marvel film because we'd be here for an hour. I will rank my top five favorite MCU films. Endgame, and again, these rankings have changed over the years, but I find for me, rewatchability year after year after year is a big thing. So again, just me. Endgame 1, Infinity War 2, Winter Soldier 3, Iron Man 4, and then this one will probably blow your mind, but I love it unapologetically. I don't care if anybody else feels the same way. Black Widow is my number 5. I love Black Widow. I think it's a great movie. I still rewatch it sometimes. All right. J-D-R-I, as the timer is about to go off. Around the discussion of injuries and pace leading to injuries, everyone talks about the solution being less games, which makes a lot of sense. What about another solution? Use the full roster on a daily basis. If the players are logging more miles and the pace is high, reduce their minutes and use all 12 men. What do you think about this? I don't think you can have a team that consistently plays 12 guys like real minutes and like gel well enough to consistently be to play at a high level. Now, as I say that, the Miami Heat are often playing 11 guys this year, and they're doing it because they're playing at the fastest pace in the league. And how much do they need to gel when they're not running into pick and roll? And it's just all drive, kick, or shoot, you know, whatever. Like, are they revolutionizing basketball? Well, Memphis tried to do this last year, and it got their coach, the assistant coach who tried to implement that plan, fired. And it completely torpedoed the organization. Again, as Zach and this was actually Zach and Stan Van Gundy said, there's like three organizations in the league that could pull this off. So I don't think it's sustainable. And I do think the gelling slash chemistry issue would rear its ugly head. To say nothing of the fact that, like, I just don't think enough teams have 12 guys good enough to warrant minutes every night. And we've seen it with the Knicks a little bit this year, where you have a guy out there who is like not pulling his weight. No pun intended, no shots fired at anybody in particular. It can really, really, really hurt what you're doing. So I don't know, maybe if the league didn't expand, maybe if the league contracted, I don't think so. All right. David Morgan, who do you see being traded first, Zion or Ja? And what do you foresee trade packages could be for each? I literally wrote down tie. Like, I think both of those guys, I think there's a decent enough chance that both of them are on different teams by next season, I think. But at the same time, trades involving those sorts of players, unless you have somewhat exigent circumstances, and I'm not sure those circumstances exist for either New Orleans or Memphis, I just don't think you see them traded in season. I see both of those as more likely being off-season moves. It's funny because, like, there exists more of a scenario, more of a black and white scenario to where the impetus would be there for New Orleans to trade Zion if this Queen thing, and I won't even say the Queen thing, if Queen and Fears, because Fears looks good too, and Queen obviously, like, he's, you know, it's muddied because of what the trade was to get him, but like he looks awesome. If this Queen and Fears thing, and then you still have Herb Jones and you still have Trey Murphy, if that kind of coalesces into like, hey, this is the team for the next 5 years, then it's like, all right, great. Get rid of Zion. He doesn't want to be here. He's never wanted to be here. He's never in shape. You have Kendrick Perkins saying he's torpedoed their organization because of the shenanigans. Yeah, get rid of him. And yet, if forced to pick one, I think I would pick Ja, because A, I think the ship has sailed and I think he doesn't want to be in Memphis anymore and I don't think they want him. And B, I could see a team talking themselves into giving up more for Ja than they would for Zion, purely because of the injury concerns with Zion, which never seemed to go away. And yes, I say that fully cognizant of the fact that it's not like Ja Morant has played a ton of games the last few years. It's close though. Great. Really good question. I really like that question. Elon Rosenblatt with another one. Ranked the most desperate teams based on the start of the season. The more desperate the team is, the more likely they are to make a rash deadline move. So the follow-up question is, what will/can the team do before the deadline? I think the most desperate team in the league is the Bucks, who are 8-10 and have shown no ability to be they're not a top 20 team without Giannis. Now, like, duh. And when Giannis is back, could they still be a top 4 team in the East? Absolutely. Top 4, now that, I don't know, that ship may have sailed. Top 6 team in the East, absolutely. Maybe not top 4, top 6. I still think they're desperate. I still think they know that there is a ticking clock over their head, which is not, I don't think that situation exists for any other superstar caliber player. So they are easily the most desperate team in the league. The problem is, I don't know what they could do because they've done pretty much everything that they could do. Like, what are they going to do? Trade Ryan Rollins? Ryan Rollins is their second best player. So you're not going to trade him. So it's probably just shuffling the deck chairs. And what are you going to call up the, are they going to be the AD team? Be like, here, Miles Turner and Kyle Kuzma. You've always wanted Kuz. Here's Kuz. But, you know, why is Dallas doing that? You know, so I don't see that. And then the other two teams I wrote down, and I don't know that desperate truly fits either of these, but I would go Warriors 2, Wolves 3. Warriors, because they did do the Butler trade, and obviously they're trying to maximize the remainder of Curry's prime. But I also don't get the sense that the Warriors would do something truly stupid, or that the Wolves would, for that matter. But also, again, like, what are either of those teams going to do? I know the Warriors could trade a bunch of picks. I don't know. The Warriors don't strike me as the team that's going to like give up some ungodly package to try to chase. Like, what trade could the Warriors realistically make that's going to put them over any of the top three teams in the West? I don't see that. Anuri H, what's going on, Anuri? With the East being as competitive as it is so far, which teams do you think are the real deal versus the pretenders? Inversely, who is better than their record? So, real deal, I have in no particular order the Heat, the Knicks, the Cavs, Detroit, and Orlando. And I would say Orlando is better than their record. Again, I've been watching a lot of Magic basketball the last week or 2 weeks. The Paolo thing is just utterly fascinating to me because, again, he is, because of how he plays, it is very easy to make the argument, not that they are a better team without him, but that they make more sense without him. And I've been a Paolo guy. I was unequivocally a Paolo, like during the whole Paolo versus Scotty Barnes thing, I was like, give me Paolo all day long. That's not looking so smart right now. It's really not. So I still have Orlando there, although I think they have something that they have to work out with that. And then I think Boston's better than their record. They have a really good scoring margin. They have a top five offense because they are doing some crazy shit with offensive rebounding. And they're just a really unique team. They're not shooting it well. They're not an efficient team. And yet they're a top offense. Sounds a lot like a team I used to know the last few years. And I just want to say my piece on Indiana. Like, you know what? I'll go a little bit long on this. I wonder how quickly I could find Fanatics isn't even sponsored this podcast, and yet I'll give them a free shout here because I want to see how quickly I could find on the Fanatics Sportsbook what the odds are right now for Miami to win the East. And let's see, NBA conferences, Eastern Conference winner. Shit, you could get Miami at plus 1,700. Look, they've done it twice. They made two finals they probably had no business making. Under this coach, I know they had Jimmy Butler, and he's not here anymore. But what they are doing on offense, just I can't believe I'm going to say this. It reminds me of the Pacers last year, not in how they are playing, but in the fact that it is so different from everything else that teams see on a nightly basis. If you are a team going in to play the Heat, it is just how they play is going to catch you by surprise. And it has already caught teams by surprise, which is why they're 12-6. And they haven't had arguably their best offensive player in Tyler Hero, who just came back, played fine. I think he will fit seamlessly into this. They haven't had Bam Adebayo for most of their games. That hasn't even mattered. And yeah, does Bam go perfectly with Ware? No. Does Hero go perfectly with Powell? No. Okay, great. You play all those guys 30, 32 minutes a night, and then you have like 10 minutes of overlap here, 10 minutes of overlap there. And what's the best part of all this? You don't want to be playing those guys a ton of minutes because Spo has them running, trying to run their opponents out of the gym. So this is absolutely a perfect concoction of things. They have enough supporting pieces who can make shots to make this work. They have just enough high-level defenders between Davion Mitchell. Wiggins can still defend. They have good size. It's like, you know, if you have size for your position and you try hard, like you could do enough on defense. And then they have Bam, obviously, who's still a top five defensive player in the sport, and he is their backstop, you know. So I just like, very legit in my mind. Extraordinarily legit. And I don't think anybody should be shocked in this Eastern Conference. And yeah, there's a little damning for the Cavs and it's a little damning for the Knicks. If we're looking up here in May and we're like, holy shit, is Miami making a run to the fucking finals? Because they know who they are. They have the best coach in the league. And it's really hard to stop what they do. If guys are going to make shots and they have shooters on their team. So, I'm saying it now. It's Thanksgiving. Just putting it out there now. Anyway. Okay, Drew. I went long on that. We gotta hurry up, otherwise I'm gonna get a lot worse than a side eye from my wife. Three questions. Detroit, surprised or I saw this coming? I was probably a little lower on Detroit than most. I did not think that a top six seed was a guarantee. I thought there was a possibility of a backslide. However, in my defense, part of the reason I thought a backslide might be, not a big backslide, but a slight backslide might be coming was because I was not fully confident in how they would be able to integrate Jaden Ivey. And guess what? Jaden Ivey hasn't played. So that hasn't been an issue, and they defend the hell out of the ball, and Jalen Duren. Will this Indiana season be remembered with the Spurs year when they were injured and got Tim Duncan with the number one pick, the Indiana Pacers select ... I sure hope not, but you know what? Honestly, the Pacers have always done things the right way as an organization for the most part. So I'll say this, they deserve that a hell of a lot more than the fucking Mavs deserved Cooper Flagg. And then who's the fourth best player in the NBA right now? We know the three best. I'm assuming when you say we know the three best, you're talking about Jokic, SGA, and Giannis. I think we know the four best. You know, I think Luka is comfortably in the top four. I think there is an argument for Luka over Giannis. Shooting. That's really all there is to it. And also, like, here's the other part of it. You need a dynamic playmaker with Giannis. We know that because when they won the championship, he had a dynamic playmaker in Chris Middleton and another pretty good perimeter player who could do stuff with the ball in Jrue Holiday. And yet his difficulty making beautiful music with Dame Lillard, and maybe there was more to that situation than met the eye, but like it gives me pause about how easy it is to like seamlessly, you know, like let's say he got traded to the Knicks tomorrow. Like, I think him and Jalen Brunson would work really well, but I don't know that. So, that colors my ranking, but I would still have Giannis maybe a little ahead of Luka. Neil Asher. All right. How many we got left? Oh my goodness. We got to hurry up. Neil Asher. What or who, if anything, would you be willing to give up to get Dante back? This is obviously from a Knicks perspective. It comes down to would I be willing to give up a future unprotected draft swap, which is all they could trade right now. They cannot trade a future unprotected draft pick, only a draft swap. I would not. I would not give up a future unprotected draft swap because then you are likely torpedoing your ability to put together a bigger package if need be. I would not give it up right now. Would I give up? Well, actually, I was going to say, would I give up Mitch? And then I was going to be like, yeah, of course I give up Mitch. And then I'm like, oh, wait, no, we wouldn't have a center. I mean, I'd give up Deuce and whatever, you know, young salaries, but that would be a tough trade to compile the necessary money together. I just don't think he answers enough questions that this particular Nick team needs to answer enough for me to put what it would take, I think, to get him right now. That's my final answer. And it's painful to say that because I fucking love Dante. Paresh Ja, how would you rank the studio crews covering the national TV games and the new landscape with NBC Prime and ESPN? I'll be honest, I haven't seen a ton of the NBC stuff. I caught the Inside the NBA crew, I think, once on ESPN. I thought it was good. It's prime by forget a nose or a head. It's prime by like a few lengths. The Prime crew is awesome. I love watching the Prime crew. I it is actually becoming not must watch TV for me, but I will make it a point to, like, you know, if I'm writing after a Knick game and they're on, I'll sacrifice the sleep so I could just see them have a segment of discussion, which that says a lot. All right, Lee, what do you think a market value contract for Deuce McBride looks like in a year and a half? I'm starting to think it may not be large after all, too large after all. It's possible that we'd be able to extend him off his current number. I think they could extend it off his current number because if it doesn't matter how little money you make, you could always start an extension starting at, I think it's either the league average salary or, yeah, I think it starts at the league average salary. And the league average salary is, like, I think roughly around the full mid-level. And I think Deuce is like, I think he's a full mid-level guy. That's what I think he is. I think he's a, you know, in this NBA economy, something like 3 for $50. You know, and honestly, even as I say that out loud, that might be a little bit much for Deuce. You know, 3 for $40, something like that. I think that's probably more in line. That's what I think he's worth. All right, we're coming down the home stretch. Last three. I may actually get out of here without angering my wife too much. MBW, thoughts on making the 3-point shot worth 2.5 points? To rein sanity back to the NBA meal diet. It's going to be a no for me, dog, but I like the creativity. Samit, what do you think of the Toronto Raptors start? They're shooting the lights out of the ball. They're shooting the ball really well. Actually, I should probably look up exactly where they rank. Right, last I checked, they were the third most efficient team in the league. They're fourth now. The Lakers passed them. So the Raptors are the fourth most efficient team in basketball right now. Last season, they were the 23rd, I think. I'm not buying them as a top 10 efficiency team. They've also had not an easy schedule, but like here's the question. Would I bet them even money to be a top six playoff team right now in the East? I don't think they're going to have, I think the Knicks, Cavs, Heat, and Pistons are all going to pass them. I think the Magic are going to pass them. You know what? I think even money, I might take that bet. Still looking at the Hawks, but the Hawks just lost to the fucking Wizards. So, and the Bucks are going to get Giannis back at some point. I would still do it. I would take that bet at even money. And then last but not least, Daryl Genovese, can you think of an objective way to measure the relative success of the following two strategies? A, tear it down, swap good players for bad contracts, young players and picks, make the picks and generally build organically, or B, whatever it is the Knicks have been doing since the 90s. Look, famously, I wanted Leon to tank. Wanted Leon to trade Julius Randle early. And then the Knicks started playing decent basketball. And I was like, fuck it, I'll go along with the ride. And it's turned out pretty well. I think the new lottery odds have made it so that, like, I just don't know that some of these teams are prepared for the level of pain that you have to be prepared for to just, again, Zach and someone on the episode he talked with Bill with CP3 about CP3 talked about like the flattening lottery odds with the, you know, the Wizards and everything. But like the part that they didn't really talk about with the Wizards, which I think is notable, is like, let's say the Wizards don't get lucky again this year and they get, let's say they get a little bit lucky. Let's say they finish with the fourth best lottery odds, which would actually be an achievement. Even if they have the worst record, finishing fourth would actually be represent like a win tech, like purely based on the math. I don't think there's four slam dunk guys in this draft. I think there's like two and a half, and I think the Boozer kid is the half. So like, let's say they finished fourth or even third, and they didn't get a slam dunk, no doubt about it, guy. Okay, great. Fast forward a year. You're probably, if you're Washington, you're probably again going to be maybe not the worst team in the league, but you're going to be a bottom five team. Guess what? Alex Saar is extension eligible next summer. No, I mean, not next summer. Like the summer after next, in a year and a half. Guess what? Alex Saar is going to want the max. Like 7-footer, put the ball on the floor, shoot, defend. He's going to ask for the max. So like the way that the contract structures work, you don't need to be good. If you have a young player that shows promise, that like you're going to need to pay that player their second contract. And so what are you going to do? You're going to just cycle through it? Like, I do think that the tanking strategy just requires more luck now than it did. And I think it will, and I'm just very curious to see. And look, really, Washington is the only true test case because Brooklyn, they're going to think that they could get free agents. Indiana is going to be right back next year. Charlotte, like, has LaMelo Ball, like, whether they believe in him as a guy or not. Also, Brandon Miller. So, like, it really is just, you know, the Wizards, like, and the Jazz, I guess, too. But the Jazz, like, they have all these extra picks and stuff, so they could make a big, you know, move and not sacrifice any of their own draft assets too. So I don't know. Let me end with this. I don't think that there is one foolproof strategy. I don't think you could say at this point that like tanking versus not tanking doesn't work. It just, so much of it comes down to luck in the lottery, luck in trades. Maybe you're able to trade for someone that you didn't think was going to be as, you know, or that, like, look at Portland. Portland traded for Denny. I'm sure they were high on Denny Avdia. I don't think they were this high on Denny Avdia. How could anybody have been this high on Denny Avdia? You know, as like a guy who's good, like an all, you know, guy might make an all NBA team at this rate. So I don't know. I don't think there's one strategy, but I do think that makes it more fun. You know, that makes it more fun, especially if you're just like an impartial NBA fan. So, all right, it's 4:59. I did it barely, but I did it. Don't know how I did it, but I did it. All righty. Thank you, everybody, for checking out part two of the mailbag. Again, I hope this came in handy for those of you with travel needs or who just wanted to listen to this podcast. Again, support the show in any way you can. Follow us on social at NBA Takedown or at NBA Takedown Pod on Twitter. Subscribe, rate, review. We have some 5-star reviews or 5-star ratings. We have some reviews. I appreciate that so much. And we'll be back on a regularly scheduled Tilt live Monday, 12 p.m. after Thanksgiving. And we look forward to seeing everybody there. All right. Peace out.